And time now to introduce you to my very special guest for the morning. He is the editor of Life and Style magazine. He also happens to be my son, which is quite unusual because one doesn't often get the opportunity to interview your son. But we won't harp on that connection just yet. We will, however, touch on it because it's fairly obvious that one needs to get...
I think at some point we'll need to address it.
Yeah, out of the way. We share a surname, clearly. So there it is. Dan Charles, welcome to the Dave Charles Show. It's lovely to have you on board on a Monday morning, all the way from Cape Town.
Hey, it's wonderful to be here. Here, this is the hottest show to be on here in the North Coast.
Well, I mean, I'm slightly biased, at least, but it is. It's great to have you on the show, and it's lovely to see you again. I mean, we don't see you enough. I understand the urgency and the importance of being down in Cape Town, where half of the team, the creative team, especially from the magazine perspective, is resident. And, of course, the magazine encompasses life and style from the perspective of a community, but not a community locality like Barlito, but rather a community of interest. So people that have similar desires and similar aspirations and similar appreciation of the finer things in life, which stretch across a much broader base, shall we say. So between Cape Town and Barlito, somewhere there is our community of interest. But let's go back to the beginning of Dan Charles. How would you introduce yourself to a group of people that don't know you from Adam?
A group of people that don't know me from Adam, I would start with my name. I'm Dan Charles. You could start off with just qualities to say, you know, I'm a nice guy. But if you want to address by titles, I'm the editor in chief of a fabulous lifestyle magazine. I'm a musician. I enjoy music. I think too much about music. Sometimes it does my head in. I'm passionate about a lot of things, and it does my head in as well. And you know, it's a very hard thing. How would you describe yourself to somebody?
I am me.
I am me. Actually, I take back everything. That's how I would do it.
Okay. Well, then let's start at the beginning. You had quite an interesting childhood, I remember, because I was there from the beginning. And initially, we were resident in Johannesburg. And then very, very shortly after you came along, we did a short lift and took you into darkest Africa, into the wilds of very, very remote and rural KZN Zululand, the border, the badlands where the Zulu War was fought and still, to a degree, is being fought. And you grew up in a very wild game reserve. What was that like? What is your earliest memory?
You know, the interesting thing about that is that when you look back, you think that must have been a wonderful experience. If I look back at how I felt at the time, it was just normal. That was just how I thought everyone grew up. I mean, I can remember the thing, like thinking back, there was, I remember one point, a whole bunch of giraffes were just outside of the gates standing around. And I thought, I knew that was nice, but I didn't realize how spectacular that was. Or there was one time where one of the guys that worked there, we took me, my brother Mike, and a bunch of kids to go see the carcass of a big a giraffe that had been struck by lightning. And I remember seeing that, and that was a tremendous thing. I remember sticking up, what was that that strong smelling herb that you stick up your nose?
Lipia javanica. Umsuzwane in isiZulu. Umsuzwane.
Yeah, I remember sticking the
wild catmint.
That's it. I remember sticking up just to get with the scent, just to, you know, make it tolerable to be around that. But then also learning about, isn't that the stuff you put up your nose to protect you from lightning?
Well, you don't necessarily put it up your nose, but there is a belief that, yes, it will keep lightning away from you.
Well, I was told, I remember, from my earliest recollection, you stick it up your nose.
Yeah, it was clearly, for you, normal to grow up in a wild place like that, but very abnormal, really, because there were not many other kids as I recall, in the neighborhood.
Yeah, and I mean, not a lot of kids. There was, a kid I ran around with, my good friend Tembo Mpanza from back in the day. We get up to no good. I remember a good hobby for a while because we didn't have constant electricity. We were running on generators. So for the hours of, for the few hours of the day that we had generator, glued in front of the TV. You couldn't get me away from it. That was precious time. And that's where, you know, I acquired this lovely international neutral accent.
I was going to ask you about that. You have a slight American twang.
That is, I believe, firmly just from absorbing
Cartoon Network.
A fair dose of Cartoon Network.
Oh, okay.
Nickelodeon and all of that. But between those, in the afternoon when the generators go off and then you had to find your way to entertain yourself, I remember I was very, for a while, I was very into collecting spiders.
Ah. And as I recall, you had a tutor.
Yes!
A rather attractive tutor, as I recall.
I mean, I was too young, but I mean, I was, you know, I was more focused on running away from her.
Okay, but it probably gave you an appreciation of attraction.
Perhaps that is where for a magazine. Perhaps that is where my where the origin of my appreciation for beautiful things came from. I'll send her a message to say that.
Okay,
although I think she's married now.
So your recollections of your very early life are fairly interesting in terms of different from the norm, but schooling must have been a problem for you.
Schooling was a problem. I remember my brother Mike, who hosts the morning show and everything. I remember he in particular was very concerned about my schooling. I remember him chasing me around one day, just throwing math sums at me, just to prove that I couldn't do it. I would hide behind the curtain, just like, leave me alone. I don't know what 2 + 2 equals.
But who taught you to read and write?
That was to read and write. A good deal of that was Mike Charles.
Really?
A good deal. I remember he used to. He was very concerned about my education, and so he took me to to his room. We had like a little upstairs attic, and he would sit me down and used a lot of flashcards. So it was like, what's this word? And then he put them together and form sentences.
And what is the age difference between you?
5 years.
So your brother, who was just a few years older than he was teaching you.
My brother must have been about like 9 or 10 years old.
But you went to school once a week, as I recall. Not proper school, but a nursery school.
Yes, a nursery school.
How did you get there?
How did I get there? By a long trek in a Jeep or a Land Rover. With whoever was available to drive at the time. It would be a long trek from Rokeshwar to Dundee, and I'd just be sitting there bobbing on the front seat, blabbering on about video games or things that I'd read on TV, and or falling asleep. I remember falling asleep a lot in the back. It was that, and then a treat on every now and then would be a stop to the Wimpy in Dundee for what I called a Franken chips and a sausage. I didn't know that a Frank was a sausage.
I remember that.
I thought that the chips were Franken chips.
And a strawberry milkshake.
Love a strawberry milkshake.
Yeah. So, and I remember that you entered a superhero fancy dress competition at the little school in Dundee that you attended once a week. And you decided to go as?
I went as Captain America.
Which in Dundee, I don't think I'd ever heard of Captain America.
This was eons and eons before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, before Captain America was a household name.
But your costume was really remarkable. Where did it come from?
Well,
I have a photograph of it, that's why I know.
We've got to put that up. The idea came from, Mike Charles. He introduced me to comic books. He had a vast collection of comic books, and one of the books he had was a lovely book of dramatic drawings of superheroes from famous comic book artists. It was a striking picture of Captain America, and because of the accent, a lot of the guests around the guest house always thought I was some American child, and then the nickname American Dan got stuck in. So I made the two connections. I thought I'd be Captain America, And
I really thought it was a marvelous costume, and you looked the part, and you acted the part, and then got to Dundee. They'd never heard of Captain America, so the superhero that won was Robin Hood. Hello,
Robin Hood, a freaking steal, a sham, and I've got to say, that costume would be nothing without the work of our managing editor and our chief of layout, our artistic director. Sue Charles.
Actually the boss.
Eh? Actually the boss. Also happens to be your wife, and that also happens to be my mother.
I speak it with deference.
She put together a fabulous costume, and the fact that won second prize, I wasn't so sore about that, because I actually remember the second prize. It was like a long cylindrical, it looked more like a trophy than anything. Ah. It was like a thing full of sweets.
Oh, so you won something.
I won second prize.
Oh, well done. Well done, you. I didn't realize that. There we go. It's marvelous.
But you couldn't tell me anything. When I put on that costume and I had that shield, I was Captain America.
You certainly were. I think you even tried to fly once. But that's another story. You then, we came to Bolito 23 odd years ago, and you were then, would have been halfway through grade one, I think, if you had been at a proper school. But you weren't at a proper school. So you arrived in Bolito. There was a little tiny school called
that was Seaforth College at the time.
That's right.
Yes, and I arrived with a tremendous disadvantage.
Well, you hadn't been in a school before, ever, and suddenly you were halfway through, you entered grade one.
I couldn't write with a
halfway
pencil.
Halfway through the year. You couldn't.
I wrote for a good while there. I could only exclusively wrote with crayon.
Really?
Because I pressed too hard, the pencil was always break, so I had to write with a crayon.
Gosh, I didn't realize we had disadvantaged you so much, but you caught up.
Oh, I got caught up and I surpassed. No, you. It's like training with with weights. It's when you take them off and suddenly it's like, ooh, now I can jump higher and I can move.
Okay. Because you had a lovely run at that school, as I recall. It later became Ashton, and you stayed. And you matriculated. I think you then decided to go on. What did you want to be when you were at school? You know, when you're thinking about a career, what did you have in mind?
What did I have in mind? Realistically, for so much of it, I just wanted to do what my brother was doing. At one point, I wanted to be a rock star, but then I remember watching a documentary on Ozzy Osbourne, and then at a young age, I was like, "Oh, his life is kind of sad. I don't want to do that anymore."
But that's right. You had a band at school.
I had a band at school. We did pretty well. We played a few shows. It was very funny because because we're talking candidly in front of each other. I would at times. A lie to you and Sue about staying over at a friend's house, and we would actually be going off to play a gig that night.
Oh, really?
At a place like the Winston Pub.
You're joking.
Yes. And so I just said, no, I'm just bringing my guitar because we didn't have band practice. We're just going to jam.
No. Well, clearly you survived, and well done for that.
It's good. It's good to admit this in front of what I'm assuming is a listening audience, because no action can be taken.
Yes,
this is a safe place for me, I think.
Okay. There was also, as I recall, an incident with the South African police that you'd kept very quiet as well during rage. I think it was.
You what? Well, I was taken into with some friends at one of the little promenade spaces near that lower part of Bolito, and we would just happen to be it wasn't even our alcohol. There was one lonely little like bottle of, I think it was like a Savannah or a Storm or something, that was not even ours. And then a bunch of police came in and they saw that. And then they saw a bunch of people, and they're like, okay, cool, you guys were all drinking in public.
Wow.
Which, I mean, you know, we were, but we weren't drinking that bottle. And so they took in a bunch of us, except for my one friend, who kind of did like that like Homer Simpson meme where he like walks backwards into the bushes. He just took a few steps back. He wasn't touched. Unfortunately, he got in touch with his brother, and he helped us out. But
yes, we didn't feel... loving parents knew nothing about that until years later. You're fortunate. We can smile about
I'm so glad we can laugh about this now. This is a fun interview. Well,
let's segue. Let's take a musical interlude, because you are a musician and you have a love of music, and you've selected some tunes for today. I think the first one is a Johnny Clegg tune. Why did you choose Johnny Clegg?
Well, I thought you'd want to talk about it, reminisce about the guest house days. And there's certain songs and sounds that like I remember as a youngster, really just being drawn to. And obviously, Johnny Clegg, that's, you know, the typical South African pop sound. I like Bullet for Bafazan because the rhythm of it reminds me of sitting in a car on a dirt road and going up and down that other duk 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 duk. And also the saxophone melody, the main saxophone melody, iconic.
10:30 on 8 FM, Radio Life and Style. The Dave Charles Show, brought to you proudly by Midwest McCarthy Toyota Bolito. In conversation with Dan Charles, who, apart from being my son, he's the editor of our magazine, the Life and Style magazine, for those that appreciate the finer things in life. It's a lekker magazine. And we were chatting retrospectively about where you grew up in early days, the bush, and later Bolito, and then you decided you'd had enough of Bolito. What happened then?
Hightailed it off to Cape Town, Western Cape.
What was the purpose of that?
The purpose of that was to further my education.
So we touched on what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be.
Oh, yeah.
And what were you studying towards?
Oh, I was studying towards, you know, what every young person who has great creative aspirations veers to when they need to take those interests into a more practical route. And I went into branding and advertising.
Branding and advertising?
Yes, specifically I got a degree in brand building and management.
Okay. Which was through...
Vega. I don't know the full name of it, but Vega.
Okay. How many years was that?
It was a 3-year course.
So you have a qualification in brand building and management, which is really good. Did it stand you in good stead eventually?
I mean, to a certain extent, it taught me a lot of interesting ways to think about branding. It taught me a lot of things about the advertising industry that I did not. I could see early on. I was like, "Oh, I'm not going to this. I'm probably not going to find myself in a long career in this avenue."
But you found a job in Cape Town that suited you.
I found I went from. I was like, "Well, how could I sort of apply this? I need to do an internship to complete my degree." And I'm like, advertising agencies don't really appeal to me this much. So what's the closest thing to brand management to my interests? Band management. So I went to a music management agency called Black Major, who at the time, it's still one of the top management agencies in the country. It represented, at the time, some of the biggest artists. Beatenberg was one of the big ones. They just, at the time that I had gotten there, they just signed the legendary Ray Peary. I mean, shortly, I only worked with him for shame a few months before his passing. I was there when they at the start of Bongiziwa Mabandla, who's a terrific singer-songwriter. His career. I was there when they discovered at the launch of DJ Lag, the Om King. Who's traveled all around the world, has collaborated with a bit of the Lion King soundtrack with Beyonce. I learned a lot of stuff from there, met a lot of interesting people. That was a lot of fun. Until it wasn't, because I was just working as a booking agent and taking on a lot of work that I was unprepared for.
What was the toughest part of that job?
The toughest part of that, I was just a very young, wide-eyed kid. A lot of it was just sort of gaining the confidence of dealing with proper industry professionals. And
but you always looked older. I think it was the beard, the build, the vibe. You managed, because, as I recall, I found out later, after the fact. But you used to travel to Cape Town by train on those terribly dangerous trains with the gangsters keeping the doors open, and you,
those are regular people.
You were holding the doors open for on some of those.
I thought you had to. I just thought I was there in the early mornings to get to varsity, and I saw this happen because it's super congested. It's packed, so people need to open up the doors of the trains. Back in the day, the trains are better now, but just to get some ventilation going. And the whole time, the doors are trying to close in, so you're fighting back. And I just thought that this is something that you had to do every now as your duty as a train commuter, which I think it is. But I did tell some of my friends about this afterwards, and they were very surprised. They were like, "I think you're one of the first white guys I've heard that has done that."
Living dangerously. So why did Black Magic come to an end for you?
I was not very good at my job. Well, the stress was getting to me. I was dropping a few balls.
You weren't very good at it.
I was,
and yet you managed to get a job with Life and Style.
I mean, look.
How did that work?
Well, fortunately, see, the job of booking agent. I thought this was going to be a stepping stone towards. I thought that was going to be my internship, and then I was really angling for a gig in PR. To write about it, because at the same time as that I was working at Black Major, I just started writing for a magazine called The Lake, which is a highly esteemed underground magazine.
It would be award-winning if there were any awards left.
I mean, it won a few online awards. Some websites gave it some titles, but it was a very beautiful magazine, and I loved working for it. And I think a great deal of the DNA of this magazine came from that. So I was more interested in writing. A lot of my attention was focused on that. And being a booking agent is a lot of just straight up logistics. And you work with me, you know this is not my strong suit.
Well, that's another story for another time. But interestingly, you talk about the magazine that you cut your teeth on as a journalist, as a writer, a very fine magazine, and the designer of that, or the layout and design of that magazine was, I think, the inspiration for the layout and design of our magazine.
Oh,
it was the same design artist initially. Yeah,
he was the guy that laid out the template for this.
Tremendous, very fine creative mind, that boy.
An absolute legend in publishing. He laid down the founding work of great magazines like Session Skateboarding Magazine, and he's worked around a lot in the art and publishing world. So. Okay.
So you initially started writing for Life and Style, and then got the opportunity to actually come on board as the editor. We'll find out a little bit about that journey on the flip side of your next tune, because you also, at the same time that you were writing for The Lake and doing your work at Black Major as a booking agent, you started playing music with some very interesting people, some SAMA award-winning people.
Oh, well, I'm playing music with them now. We have another band, but at the time, I was their band manager. I met some friends after I got the gig at Black Major. You know, I started talking to some friends who thought that was very interesting. They thought that I could maybe take some of my intel from there and help them out. And my friends, Evan Strauss and Shannon Devey, we were in a band called Logos. They wanted to know if I could help them out with a few things.
I think you did, because they won their first SAMA around that time, shortly thereafter.
Fully taking the credit for their SAMA award.
And it's one of your song choices that we're going to be listening to right now. With Dan Charles, the editor of the Life and Style magazine, a quarterly publication in glossy format that has been instrumental, I think, in taking Belito, brand Belito, to the next level. It's not a Belito magazine per se. It started off as a Belito magazine, but has now widened its scope and ambit to incorporate the bigger picture of things that interest and affect when it comes to the life and style of people that live in South Africa and beyond, that appreciate the finer things that we have to offer in this part of the world, stretching it right the way down to the mother city, and that's where half if not more, of our creative energy comes from Cape Town. You are based in Cape Town. You're up for a short while. We were talking about the acquiring the editorship of the Life and Style magazine. It was a reach out at the time. I recall that it had been through a couple of editors, and you seemed to have a desire and the skill to take it in a new direction, which you've done, and I think you've done it very well.
Oh, thank you.
What is your vision for the magazine?
My vision for the magazine, I want to see it grow. I want it to get bigger and better. I think after a good while, the identity of it is starting to shape up. I think it is a tremendous treasure trove of various interests collected and cultivated by our team of writers.
It's interesting. We went to the movies the other night to see The Devil Wears Prada, the remake, or The Devil Wears Prada 2, which is a follow-on from the 20 years ago, the first one, or 10, I don't know.
20 years ago.
20 years back, okay. The interesting thing is when the storyline went in a new direction, it was because the editorial content had taken on a more serious, a more intelligent, a more considered tone. They needed to... It was a spin because they got into trouble, etc., etc. But it struck a chord with me because the editorial content in the Life and Style magazine has always been quite extraordinary in the sense that you have selected writers that have expertise in various fields, and you've briefed them, and they've produced some really fine work. No AI, as far as I can tell, or very little AI. What is your view on the AI phenomenon?
On the AI phenomenon? Look, actually, I've actually asked in the next issue, I've asked one of our writers, Tara Brain, who's done a lot of research into the AI stuff, to write a piece on AI for the next issue. I don't... Like, the thing is, I would like to say flat right that, like, I don't mess with it. I don't think it's overall a good thing. But the thing is, it's here. I think as a tool, it is good. I think what we need to worry about is... I was reading a lot of discourse about about AI slop generation. These terrible videos being made from just sheer AI, mostly like bad soap operas made with this fruit.
I've seen them. Yeah,
someone had a quote of saying like the thing that AI has illuminated is humanity's sheer lack of imagination when given like godlike resources. Like we can make anything, and most of what's being made is rubbish.
Now, taking it back to the world of writing, creative writing, it must be quite tempting as a journalist to get a brief on a story when you're going to get paid for it. Writer's block is a real thing. Deadline management is a real problem. Creativity is a real problem. Finding a voice... So the temptation is, and I know it is because I have succumbed to it from time to time, to simply program into an AI app the gist of what it is you're trying to create, and then it spits out a piece. You can give it a slant to say, make it sound like Daryl Bristow Bovey, and it'll come out with that sort of style of writing. As an editor, are you wary of that?
I'm wary of that. I think it's good. I use that as well. I think it's nice to... It's sometimes the task of starting something, just that blinking cursor that taunts you, is a lot to overcome. So as a starting point, it's sort of like having like a brick of marble that you can then maybe turn to a sculpture.
There's a danger that it takes you on a road that you weren't going to go down, and then you stick to that road because it's easier.
Well, that's it. If you use that as your main roadmap and just sort of try to reword it like you're trying to get away with copy-pasting your essay for your homework, I think that is a problem. The main thing with the trouble with AI and that we're seeing with especially like, youngsters who are in varsity using this for their essay work and using this for their homework and their assignments is that when you have all the information that can be readily just plus in front of you, your critical thinking muscles is like to start to atrophy in a way that, like, oh, I'm not going to go out and search for the knowledge.
That is a problem. I've noticed in the radio advert production side of the business, if we receive a script that has been formatted or created by a PR agency or even, dare I say, an ad agency, I can tell straight away whether it's the subject of ChatGPT or one of the others.
That's
Grok.
Everyone can do it. Everyone's emails are suddenly all sound like they're written by the same person.
And although they sound terribly clever, they are dreadful. They are. They just don't have that.
They lack the warmth of a human.
They don't have the creativity that the human brain is able to conjure with, the intelligent, the smart, the experienced human copywriter, I think, will always have an edge. But the problem is that it's much cheaper to use AI than it is to go and brief a copywriter. So I fear we're on a bit of a downhill slope.
It's much cheaper, but I do believe, maybe I'm naive and pie-eyed about this, but that in turn will mean that the original human thought and the original human word will become that much more valuable.
I like that, and I think that you're quite right. This is where the Life and Style magazine stands out, because your brief is generally speaking to writers and creators that have what it takes to produce.
Yeah, I was watching a clip of an interview with a poet and author called Ocean Vuong, who was talking about a little bit about what the job of a writer is. And one of the things that he's come up with is that, like, one of the main jobs of a writer is to try and write a sentence that's never been written before. He's written something and he showed it to a friend, like, oh, that's good, but I've read that so many times. And it's hard to do, sometimes not necessary, but with this magazine, to give it to a person that cares about a subject and writes about something in a way that hasn't, it's maybe a little bit different, hasn't been written before, and allows you to maybe discover or rediscover something that will illuminate and bring joy and light to your life while you're sitting at the airport.
Okay, we're coming to an end of our interview now, and I just wanted to wrap it up by asking you, what is the worst thing about your job at the moment?
I have so many deadlines that I that I need to meet, and I need to go stand in front of a blinking cursor, transcribe some interviews. The worst part about the job is that it is hard, and I'm fighting against the temptation just to rush into AI, even though it'll make it a lot easier. The worst part about the job is that. Yeah, the worst part of it is that it carries on going, but that's also the best part about the job.
I was going to ask you that next. What is the best part about you? What is the best thing about your job?
The best thing about this job, I get to work with wonderful people. I get to, I get to work with my mother, just like when we worked on that Captain America costume. I think that's a wonderful thing to carry on to do in your adult life. I get to work with you as you write the lost word, and getting to read what you come up with, it greatly inspires me and pushes me. What my friends write in the magazine inspires me and pushes me to be better. And to have a print magazine in the year of our Lord 2026, a South African print publication, is a damn miracle and a huge. It's almost like a privilege. It's like, to keep this ball in the air, it's like I was obligated to try and kick the ball as high as possible.
Well, I think you're doing a fabulous job, Dan, and more strength to your bow. Thank you for joining me on the Dave Charles Show this morning.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
We're going to play out with the last of your triumvirate of choices. It's the magnetic fields. I don't know anything about this tune. Tell us.
Oh, they're a wonder. Oh, they're a wonderful New York. It's a project brought by a wonderful singer songwriter called Stephen Merritt in New York. He's just I like him. He's a guy that loves a writing assignment. Does big concept albums, and this is one of the. This is probably the most famous song. It's a great wedding song. I used it as inspiration for a song I wrote for a friend's wedding a while ago. And I just wanted to play this off because it's called The Book of Love. And I believe that this magazine here that I'm holding in my hand that you can find in and around town and at your local airports in the slow lounges is a book that is made you know, out of and with and inspires love.
My very special guest this morning, the editor of Life and Style, the magazine, Dan Charles, playing it out with The Book of Love.